Money FM 89.3, the best of the afternoon update.
You're listening to Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly, and now it's time for Eco Money, where we bring you the latest in sustainability and finance. Now, did you know that coastal and marine-based industries contribute upwards of $2.5 trillion to the global economy? That, in broad terms, is what is referred to as the blue economy. But when it comes to the blue economy, the time of all take and no give apparently has come to an end. Governments across the globe are looking to tap into the blue economy, aiming to combine ROI with preservation. For example, the Development Bank of Latin America has announced a voluntary commitment of $1.2 billion to support projects that benefit the region's oceans, and the European Investment Bank will extend an additional 150 million euros across the Caribbean region as part of the Clean Oceans Initiative. The money will be used to improve climate resilience, water management, and solid waste management. Elsewhere, a coalition of governmental organizations has partnered to develop a global practitioner's guide for bonds. The guide will provide eligibility criteria, step-by-step processes, and case studies for applying the International Capital Market Association's principle to blue bond issuance to bring about standardization in blue bonds, much like has already been done with green bonds. So what role does the private sector play in developing the financial structure required to support the blue economy, and how can investors get involved? Well, to find out, we're joined now by Harlan Singh, who is Citi Global Wealth's Global Head of Sustainable Investing. Harlan, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thanks, Rachel, for having me on.
Harlan, sustainability investing, it's gained traction over the past 2 years. A number of countries have set out their net zero targets. Corporations are increasingly disclosing initiatives and sustainability reports. But at the same time, a recent UN report has shown that most countries are still behind on climate goals. Why the mismatch?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, I think I agree with you totally. The last 2 to 3 years has absolutely shifted the conversation, shifted the narrative. Part of it is driven by what's going on in the world, right? The pandemic in the US, Black Lives Matter movement, you know, really highlighted the inequalities that exist in the world. The pandemic itself highlighted the inequalities that existed in the world. We saw the vaccine rollout. We saw what access or in access to clean water, as it relates to safety precautions, et cetera, healthcare, right? It was astounding. I was in New York and you saw the boats lining up out in the river for extended healthcare services because the hospitals were overloaded. We saw the impact on hospital care workers. And so I think that what that did was energize people to try to figure out how they can use any possible means to further progress towards, you know, a fair and more equal planet and for people. And also the investment opportunity has increased, right? So to your question around, is this lip service or is it not? We're starting to see the dollars really move at this point in time because there are investable opportunities. Whereas one could argue over, you know, the last 10 to 15 years, the investable opportunity was divestment. Not owning certain stocks, not owning certain sectors that didn't align with a specific set of values. And the conversation has shifted from values alignment to really seeking opportunities to grow businesses that are meeting needs, right? And that's the difference between sustainable investing and traditional investing. It's really focusing on needs versus wants, really delineating between the two. An example within healthcare is not all healthcare is sustainable investing, right? At the outside, you might think, well, why not? Because healthcare is healthcare. It helps people become healthy. But within the healthcare industry is also cosmetic healthcare. And when you think about discretionary spending and recessionary environments like we're in right now, the wants are the first things to get cut, right? Because you don't actually need that, but you will always need access to healthcare related to illnesses. If there's a pandemic, if someone gets sick in your family, you're going to seek out healthcare.
And a question that we often get asked by our listeners is, can you actually combine profits and purpose?
Yeah, I think people have a really hard time with this. And it's more psychological than anything else. Because if you really start to think about companies, every single company has a positive and negative impact on the world and on people. So actually separating the two could be more detrimental than in some ways bringing the two together. And the reason I say that is because until investors start to put a greater onus on companies in terms of how they operate, do they have fair labor practices? How do they, you know, do they have a diverse workforce? Are they high emitters? What are they doing to manage their transition? You kind of have to bring the two together.
So essentially ESG then will become almost like a hygiene factor for a lot of these companies. Okay. And you know, often when we talk about sustainability investing, we talk about green finance, green bonds, but you're here in Singapore this week to talk about blue finance. What exactly do we mean by that?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And you're absolutely right. I mean, when we think, you know, one of our unstoppable trends in our market outlook is greening the world. Mm-hmm. Within greening the world, actually, we do talk about water. We talk about access to water. We talk about desalination. We talk about, you know, all of those components. But we still, it's still within kind of greening the world, you know. And one of the things that we've been talking about during this week is there are two colors, right? Green and blue. And we often forget about the blue. And I think the reason we do is because we don't see what's under the sea, right? We're so used to just seeing the sea. And I don't think people fully appreciate the benefits of the ocean, right? We think about trees when we think about carbon sequestration. Mm-hmm. It's not as well known in terms of the role the oceans play in that. It's not as well known in terms of what ocean acidification resulting from pollution and emissions is doing to biodiversity in oceans and how that actually impacts, coming back to healthcare solutions, right? The healthcare industry relies heavily on oceans and ocean species to develop drugs, cosmetics, everything, right? But we don't always think about that.
So talk to us about the investment opportunities then. How can investors get involved in investing in the blue economy?
We're starting to see more opportunities as it relates to aquaculture and fishing and sustainable fisheries, sustainable fish farms to provide protein, right? There's obviously an economic opportunity there. There's an economic opportunity in alternative fuels. So there are certainly, you know, the seaweed example, right? That's providing economic opportunity, job growth. And then when you think about kind of the knock-on effects, right, it also impacts entire communities when you're able to create these jobs in these industries.
So what do you think are going to be some of the key themes then when it comes to sustainability investing in the next year?
The way sustainable investing has progressed this calendar year has been really around security, energy security, food security, border security. And a lot of nuance has been introduced to sustainability. You could argue before this year, many investors were looking to exclude fossil fuels, right? That was kind of the industry that is polluting, that is creating these emissions and is creating this problem that we're in today. And then we saw in March and April, the disruption in fuel supplies, what that did for energy security for the most vulnerable populations. And so nuance is being introduced there. Defense, another one. Defense, often an exclusion for sustainable investors. There's an incredible amount of nuance now in that sector, right? How do we think about defense when it comes to protecting people and protecting borders? Food security, another one, where we saw the disruption in supply of wheat and fertilizer. Again, you know, that has impacted all of us. Those of us, I don't know about you, when I go grocery shopping now and I see blueberries for $15, I kind of have a little bit of a heart attack, a little bit of a sticker shock there. But, you know, this is exactly, I think, what has changed over this year. And in terms of in the next year, the combination of the pandemic and the war in Europe and what that's done in terms of security, I hope will continue to help investors think about sustainability as an ecosystem. Many investors are motivated by something that they personally care about, right? Whether they have a passion for the oceans or for the rainforests or for education or for healthcare. But really, it's more complicated than that. These areas are really interlinked, and the UN published the 17 SDGs on purpose as 17 because they're interlinked. Mm-hmm. We can't really succeed at one without succeeding at the others.
What's your thoughts then on the 1.5 degree goal? Because there are a number of articles and research papers out that say we need to move beyond that.
My thoughts are we need to listen to the scientists. You know, it's interesting how the lack of progress has been driven by various views on what needs to be done, what doesn't need to be done. Corporations and industries that are obviously, you know, motivated to stay in business. But there needs to be greater collaboration. So this comes back to goal 17, right? Partnership for the goals. And until we see more progress with that goal specifically, I think we're going to continue to struggle, right? We need to partner with the scientists, with the academics to come up with solutions that will enable greater progress. It's easy to get kind of depressed and feel like you want to just give up. But, you know, I was saying earlier today that I'm an angry optimist. Angry because you have to be angry.
Yeah.
Because if you're not angry, you can't get motivated. Mm. Right? You can't get sad. You have to recognize the urgency. And optimist because if we're not optimists, then we all give up.
Okay, Harlan. So from your angry optimist perspective, talk to us about what role finance plays in supporting the blue economy.
Yeah, I think finance has a greater role to play than we actually realize today. When it comes to the supporting the blue economy and when it comes to, you know, quote unquote, blue investing, it's still very early days. Only over the last, you know, 3 to 4 years have we seen the green bonds market grow the way that we've seen it grow. And the blue bonds market is nowhere near that. And so, you know, it's about, you know, I think the opportunity is huge. The funding gap is huge. The market failures are enormous. And there's a real opportunity for private capital to play a role in this. There's a huge, obviously, philanthropy has played the largest role, philanthropy and government funding, in terms of the blue economy, in terms of ocean preservation to date. But clearly, there's still a lot more to do. And so this is where the trillions of dollars of investor capital can be reoriented to the blue economy.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us today. We've been speaking with Harlan Singh, Citi Global Wealth Global Head of Sustainable Investing, right here on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.